Hello, everybody, and welcome to Show Hoppers Severance, Season 1, Episode 2, Half Loop. I'm Kurt, joined by my former high school teacher, Mr. Sal.
My name is Mr. Sal. I've been on Show Hoppers for about 4 years. And something about me is that my favorite core principle of Show Hoppers is that one does not talk about one's dreams.
I am Kurt. I've been with Show Hoppers for at least 2 years. And I was Mr. Sal's second choice. Just kidding. And my favorite golden rule is that a child or marriage can fix any relationship in any state.
Just left the nod out of that. It's good. Don't misquote the rule book at me.
don't do that. Don't. That will not fix anything. But we're here with episode 2 of Severance. We loved episode 1. I gave it a 9. You gave it a 10. But how did we feel about episode 2? Let's see.
Ratings.
Hey, Mr. Sal, you gave last week a 10.
I did give last week a 10.
And if you gave last week a 10, I think you gave this week a 10. Simply, I think you liked the stuff in the work environment. They really show the cult vibes or institutionalized stuff.
Very culty.
Yeah, very culty. I think you like seeing Irving and his stuff we've seen this episode, development, wellness center checkup, whatever that is. Christopher Walkins is there. You love doing voices. I'm sure you love doing a Christopher Walkins voice. Did you see a Super Bowl ad?
No.
There was a Super Bowl ad, which was basically everyone always tries to imitate Christopher Walken when they see him. Like, it was like a skit.
It's true. Why aren't you calling me? And, I'm terrible. I'm terrible at Christopher Walken, but oh, yeah. I do like to impersonate him, but I'm terrible at him.
Quick sidebar real quick. So the thing with that Super Bowl ad, if you haven't seen it, check it out. It's a really funny ad. Uh-huh. Listeners as well. The issue with that ad, I feel like, is that it's the type of ad where it's a good skit.
Yeah.
But it's a bad ad. Like, I don't remember what it was even advertising. I really don't remember what it was advertising.
Oh, my gosh.
But I remember how funny it was, which is everyone imitates Christopher Walkins and they see him.
You know, Christopher Walken, an interesting Christopher Walken story. Like, I love Christopher Walken. I think he's great. I think he's a great actor. I think my favorite Christopher Walken thing is the Fat Boy Slim video. I think it's Weapon of Choice, which you probably don't even remember.
I have no idea
what that is. From the 90s. Oh my God, it's just him dancing around an empty hotel. It's hilarious. It's so good. That's all it is. Just him in an empty hotel dancing to this song. It's really cool. But he did a live performance of Peter Pan. He played Captain Hook. This would have been maybe 2014, maybe 15, around that time. And he was, it was a live televised performance. So every year NBC does a live televised musical. Okay. So the actor screws up, it's there. Everybody sees it. So it's supposed to simulate a theatrical experience. He was terrible. He was forgetting. He was forgetting lines. He was dropping cues. I mean, he was a train wreck on this thing, and the guy who played Mr. Smee had to save him and bail him out on several occasions.
I'm very keen to see this now.
And you know who the guy was who played Mr. Smee? Because you and I saw him on Broadway. It was Christian Borle.
Really?
It was Joe from Some Like It Hot. And he saved Christopher Walken several times over. Unbelievable. Anyway.
Christopher Walken's. Anyway, you like Christopher Walken, so glad to see that. So you like Bert in the episode. And you like what goes on with the Audis. Specifically, Mark, we see a little bit of the political side, alcoholism, and it looks like, I'll be honest, I think you're right. They seem to really show it here, that they are not severed.
They're not severed.
The upper management.
Yeah, they're not severed.
And you being right, I think you really like that. You gave it a 10.
Okay. I think the only thing you really complained about from episode 1 was that it was too pilot-y. So this is not a pilot. I don't know. You said it. So this was not a pilot episode. And so I think that you did not feel like it was too pilot-y. And you gave it a 10. I think about to elaborate a little bit. I think you really liked a lot of the stuff that you had talked about in our coverage of episode one. They kind of touch on here in this episode, especially on that first date that he has with the midwife, where she talks about how you could have a family and out here and not even, and you forget about them for 8 hours a day, and you could have a whole separate romantic relationship in there. So anyway, I think that's they didn't talk about pregnancy specifically, but the other thing I think you loved seeing was Helly's intake, because I know you like seeing the same thing from different perspectives. So I think you loved seeing her in the stairwell with Milchick. I think you liked the whole intake. You know, we get to see how it all happens. So I think you gave us a 10.
That I did, and I did love that intake stuff. Oh, we got to figure out what Mr. I have written down. Egan's, was it?
Egan, yeah. Breakfast. Yeah.
Three regs. Raw eggs, listeners, and milk.
Yes.
That's all you need in the morning. Eggs will keep you going. Eggs are filling.
Oh, I know. I just want to cook them. That's all.
But, if you have the time to cook them, cook them. But.
Yeah.
I certainly like the episode. You were right. And a question I have to do with the midwife and I'll ask you this. This is a prediction style thing, and maybe we shouldn't do it now. But do you think there will be any office romantic relationships?
Yes.
All right.
I do. I definitely do.
All right. I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued to see how that goes. I can see Helly and Mark in the office. Yep. But then obviously in the outside world, they don't know each other. Maybe they hate each other.
Yeah.
Mark almost had
I actually think that I'd be shocked if there's not at some point an office romance. Yeah.
I feel like that's a cool thing you want to hit on. Like I would love to see that.
Me too.
All right. Okay. So I love this episode. How did you feel about it?
So I could probably be talked up to a 10, but I'm on a 9 right now. And for one reason and one reason only, I really was hoping to see some sort of interaction of the Audis, unbeknownst to them. I mean, we kind of got it with Helly and Mark in episode one, where he almost hit her with the car, and we thought we got it with Mrs. Selvig and Mark at the end of episode one. But I really wanted to see, I don't know, like, you know, like Dylan.
You can do though, right?
Like, I know.
All right,
but I think that
I
want to see these four. I want to see the four who are severed. I want to see them come across each other in the outside world. And I think at some point we're going to see that there are two of them that actually have some sort of friendship or relationship in the outside world, and they just don't know it on the inside world. But I think that's the one thing that I really felt was lacking. I really loved everything that happened in this episode. But I really wanted, even if it was something small, some sort of interaction between the four severed people on the outside.
The only thing I'm going to argue with that is that we are pretty early in the season. There's only four of them. And when you look
it's only 9 episodes, though.
Oh, I mean, we've already got a little of that satisfaction last week. You can't have that every single episode. There's only four of them. I think you don't want to overdo the pudding, so to speak, or whatever I'm saying is. You can't. I think it's a little too soon to do it. And when you look at how the plot of this episode went, you'd have to substantially change it. Because the only real time Mark could have seen him was during his date. The way they filmed it, right? That's really the only time Audis could have seen each other. Because other than that, when we saw him outside, they were at work inside.
Yeah.
That's
true.
It's kind of hard to swing it for this episode.
Well, it didn't have to be Mark, though. I mean, it could have been anybody. Now that they have spent time away from Mark.
They have. You're right. Yes, because he's not in the office and stuff, and they keep showing it, and we see Irving. And
Yeah, I mean, it could have been Irving and Dylan, like our, you know, D&D buddies or something.
So here's what I'll say here. If they do that, it won't be as earned. Right? Like, you will not be as happy as you will be if they do what they did with Irving first, and then they do that. I think it makes it even cooler. If you get to know Irving a bit more, like we already, like now we know more about Irving here. We have more him in the innie, right? Inside the office. So when we see him outside, it'll be more of a juxtaposed and it will feel like maybe it'll feel almost creepy-esque how different what he's like.
You're probably right. Like if he despises dances and he's terrible at lovemaking. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm thinking of all this stuff. Like whenever we see him, I'm going to look back and see if we get references to what was listed in the wellness center. I think if they do that, basically – I feel like it kind of spoils it in a way. Not like a spoiler, but as it won't. Once they introduce a character in the outside world, they interact. I want it to be really special. And there's only a few of them so far that we know that are severed. So I really want it to be special. So like, I'm all right if it takes time, right? I'm not. I'm here for the long haul because now, again, like Irving, it'll be cooler now if we see him next episode on the outside and they interact. It'll be even cooler.
Okay, but. Again, there's only 9 episodes. So, like, it's fine that Lost waited until episode whatever it was, 8 maybe, to show us 2 characters that we knew interacting on the outside. I don't know. Was it Con Man? Was that the one, the first one? Anyway,
I don't know.
Whatever.
I
think it was Con Man. I think that was episode 8. But anyway, it's fine that they waited until episode 8 because they had like 23 episodes in the first season. Like with only 9 episodes, I think they got to get to it pretty soon. So
mathematically, they got at least till episode 3, and they already did it in episode 1. So
yeah.
I don't know. I feel like.
When you say they already did an episode 1, you're talking about Mark almost hitting
that's
Ellie.
That's true.
That doesn't count. Yeah.
I disagree. I felt a few lost vibes. But it wasn't super special. I agree. Like, they didn't really interact. Yeah, that's true. They didn't really interact. They didn't have a conversation.
Exactly. So, yeah, anyway. And by the way, I'm right about episode 8 being Confidence Man, and I'm pretty sure that was the one. But I might be wrong about that.
Well,
Lost, I'm talking
that's
about. Fine. Sorry.
But if that's your one snag.
That is really the only one. The only thing.
I feel okay. Well, then how about this then? If they do get together and it's great, because they waited on it, because they were able to do other plot stuff, will you rescind this negatory mark on this episode?
Probably. And honestly, I might go up to 10 by the end of our conversation. Right, okay. I
just wanted to get a pledge 10. From you. I wanted a pledge. A pledge here at episode 2.
Yeah. I mean, it's a high 9 and it's a borderline 10. I that was the one thing I felt was missing. That's but I really do love everything else that was in here. So
I did feel like the outside world was more shortchanged than this episode versus last episode. Like last year, right? It's very pretty 50-50 split. This one, I mean... First of all, they went away from the 50-50 split. So it goes back and forth.
Yeah.
But it's like mostly in office with some outside.
I was less interested in what happened in the outside world this time than I was in episode 1.
I agree.
And that should not probably have happened because Petey, they interact. Mark and Petey, like Mark goes to Petey and but I was a little disappointed by the fact that Petey doesn't really know what's going on. he came to Mark and he's like, no, they're after me. They can't be trusted. If you knew what was going on in that place. And then he doesn't even know.
Well, no, he knows that he's a recording.
Well, I guess.
Like, you're right. He doesn't have hard proof. But like I don't know what else he might have. But like, he knows that they're being mistreated down there. He knows he filed for stuff and it didn't go through. And I don't know. I'm assuming he has his memories from when he's down there. So, like, he does know what they've done to them down there.
So, I want to know more about how – just the logistics of him because
– Oh, yeah, me too.
He also says that he's been reintegrated for 2 weeks. Now, as far as I know, this is the Monday – so this is, day 4 from when we started? We started on a Friday, and now it's the Tuesday, I guess.
So, presumably, he was working there while he was still –
Yes, well, he was presumably he was kind of like a mole, right?
Yeah,
he was more not severed, and he was working in the severed unit, which is probably why he got fired or why he's not there anymore.
And they're after him.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Yeah. So, I mean, my assumption is that he got that recording because he was in there with a recorder. I don't know. So apparently recorders are okay on the elevator, but notes are not.
Maybe they don't have recorders down there. Like, they don't even have that technology, so they wouldn't think of it.
I don't know. They don't have much technology.
Imagine you smuggled down a recorder and you went, what the heck's this? What did outing me bring in? This weird device? I got to report this. Hey, sorry.
Yeah.
Outing must have forgotten to hand this in.
Lots of cool stuff about how you interact with your Audi too. I really like that. That was pretty cool. I like the idea that, you know, yeah, you could submit a request for resignation, but they almost always get denied because the Audi is the one who has to approve them, and the Audi is doing just fine.
They're doing just fine, and it looks like they don't even show them the paperwork.
Right. So. Well, at least not like they can't hand deliver it.
Yeah. Yeah. I question whether the Lumen even gives the Audi the paperwork.
Right.
They just say, yeah, we showed them. Don't worry.
You might be right, but I do think that even if they did, it's going to get
Audi
still.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That is like, nah, dude. Get back to work, Kurt.
Exactly.
Man, I'm lazy. And I'm interested in seeing the diabolical scheming between the upper management. And Mark definitely seems to be in the deep waters, both like in work, out of work. And he just was in the break room, which we saw for the first time, and now he's getting involved with Petey. We'll see what that does for him.
So who do you think is not severed? I would assume that Harmony, Milchick, and Grainer are not severed.
Milchick, who's the last one you said?
Grainer. He's the
security guy. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Grainer, I'm unsure on just because we don't know him super well. Like, maybe he's a security guy that they sever. And, like, yeah, they talk to him about unsevered things, but, like, when he's down there, he's severed. But I think you're right. Definitely based on what we've seen, Milchick and Harmony. Unsure on Grainer, but it's not a far assumption.
What about the wellness? I don't know her name, the wellness woman, doctor.
Miss Casey, I think.
Miss Casey, yeah. I would assume that she also is severed, or not severed, sorry, that she's not severed, but Bert, I think, probably is severed.
So, I agree. And I kind of have a theory as to why they sever the people.
Okay.
I have a theory, which we can get into later. But I have a theory. Okay. So, why they sever them? Like, what's the purpose of severing them?
Okay.
And if not for a corporate secrets as well. I mean, it could be just like, you know, get more out of your worker because they're more to your cause. But I think there's an alternative reason as well. Like, there's a benefit that an unsevered employee would be incapable of doing. So
beyond keeping secrets.
Beyond keeping secrets.
There's my
ooh, yeah, now you're interested.
That's a teaser.
Teaser, yes. But before we get there, let's hear about our favorite scenes.
Favorite scenes.
So you didn't like the fact that they didn't see it. So it's got to be something on the inside. The question was on the inside. You started off talking about the office party. You love parties, like office parties specifically. So
office functions.
Functions, yes. Oh, yes, a good function. So I think you went with the office party scene.
Okay. That's what I was going to guess for you. The ball game, the say something about yourself.
Yeah, something. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think there's also a chance that Irving's wellness session is up there. I think Helly's intake is also up there. I don't think it's anything on the outside for you either. I think it's one of those three scenes. I had originally said the office party, so I'll go with the office party for you too.
Darn. You got me.
Yeah.
Did I get you?
No, it's not the office party.
Ah, humbug. But yes, I did say the office party.
Okay.
I like the, again, horror done right. I don't know if this should be classified as horror, but I kind of see
it's terrifying.
Horrific.
I think it's terrifying.
Just the rolling the ball Irving, he's all in on the system, right? Like throughout the episode,
trust falls and all.
Oh yeah, he gets up, he's ready for the trust fall later. Actually, earlier, sorry, and they refer to it here in the office party. You know, he talks about which is your favorite Lumen principle? All seven.
Yeah, because you know that's the right answer, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. And the when it gets out about the I'll wait a bit for that. But okay, so we see Irving with the ball. Helly gets the ball, and she's there. I see the most normal person of the bunch. She's not as indoctrinated as everyone.
Sure.
So she, she's quite frank. I know nothing about myself.
Yep.
I would love to talk to my outie. Can I give her some more stuff and hear about these co-detectors, which I even wrote here. Are they even real? Sounds like. Which I'm glad they actually showed us, because I would not have believed in the co-detectors. But
yeah, yeah.
Mark gets the ball, and he admits he broke protocol with the PD photos.
Well, not at first. At first, he just says, "I love this game."
Yeah, he does. He does. He tries to. And then Milchek, or he said that last time. So he goes to an honest answer. Broke protocol with the PD photos, and it, like, the way Dylan and Irving respond to it, like, Dylan's like, "Can confirm he did," and Irving earlier was, the fact this protocol was broken was bugging him so much. He's like, photos are gone. That's not supposed to be the case. Even when it got the buy rules for him.
Yeah.
And then eventually, I'll talk about PD, again, argument about PD's sudden departure. And could he even be dead? But we don't worry about death down here. That's nothing of a concern. Irving, after they're kind of done with this and they start enjoying their melon, Irving notices some sort of dirt or substance under his fingernails.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whatever that is. And Mark and Helly have a sidebar, which is basically, Mark's not going to ask anything more about PD. Yeah, Milchuk's a nice guy. And he doesn't always
until
have to
he's
be
not.
Nice. Yeah. And then they have their group photo where Helly quits. I feel like it's its own scene when she quits.
Yeah, so I wanna call to your attention a couple of things. First of all, Milchek is, I think, terrifying.
He's diabolical. He's the scariest one right now.
He's really scary. When he says that's enough, like it's like that. I mean, we've already had the indication that he is not severed. He knows what's going on inside and out, but. That's the impression I got from the opening scene anyway.
Mm-hmm, me too.
But here, Mark makes a really good point, because Milchek calls him out and says, why are you feeling this way about PD? You didn't feel this way about Carol D. And he calls it an outburst. Well, you didn't have this kind of outburst for Carol D. Mm-hmm. And the outburst is just him taking the photos off the desks, which were going to come off the desks anyway. But he says, you didn't have this kind of outburst with Carol Dean. And Mark very aptly explains that we knew she was leaving. Her outie sent us a thank you. Petey was sudden. We didn't know he was leaving. We don't know where he is. We don't know. He could be drunk on a beach. He could have gotten another job. He could even be dead. And I mean, Milchick's got to walk the line here between letting Mark have his say and making sure that Helly doesn't get too spooked by what Mark is saying, but he shuts him right down. He says, "That's enough." That's scary.
It's like a very parent child relationship esque to me. Like this isn't it's not the typical that typical relationship between employer and employee.
No. He says, I think that probably a reasonable response to the fact that we're so safe here would be gratitude. Making a prisoner feel grateful for their prison is a substantial power tactic. This is a thing. If you make the captive feel grateful for being held captive, then that's when you really can control them.
Yeah.
So. So that's what he's doing here. The other thing I want to call to your attention, I noticed that, and I don't know if this will ever become anything, but Dylan is very, very picky about which melon balls he takes.
He was.
And later on, he's going to be very picky about which snack he gets from the vending machine.
That is true. Yeah, I do remember that part. The vending
machine. So they called it to our attention twice in this episode. So I'm assuming that that is going to come up at some point in a future episode.
All right. Fair enough.
Yeah.
You've planted your flag. All right. Well, then what's your favorite scene, huh?
All right. My favorite scene, I really had trouble deciding between two, and it's the other two that I thought about guessing for you. It's the intake and the wellness session. And I really had trouble, but ultimately I went with the intake. I really loved this intake. This very first scene of the episode is just so cool. I mean, it answers a lot of questions and then leaves us with even more questions. Mm-hmm. I very rarely pick the opening scene of an episode for my favorite scene. I did it a lot with Watchmen.
I do.
Yeah. Yeah, that Watchmen had some killer.
They start strong in Watchmen.
Yeah, but I really liked this intake scene. So, first of all, it's another alternate perspective. They did this in episode one. They showed us the alternate perspective of Hallie's interview from her perspective and then from Mark's perspective. So, in episode one, they showed us Mark's perspective of Hallie going into the stairwell, and here we get her perspective. But before we get to that point, we see Hallie's consent video. She's very happy. She's like a happy, joyful person, at least happy about doing this. Mm-hmm. Maybe she's not happy in the rest of her life, but here she is happy to be doing this. Anyway, Milchick is there with her, filling her in on everything that's going to happen, and mentions Mr. Egan's favorite breakfast, the three eggs and milk. Hallie even looks happy as they drill a hole in her skull. She is happy to have this implant, happy to have this hole drilled in her skull. And we see the implant. It's a pretty interesting scene because we actually see, you know, on the monitor right where the implant goes. And it is like an implant, and it has these like barbs that come out so you can't pull it back.
You don't want to do that. Why would you want to do that? No, I did not notice the barbs.
Yeah. So it goes in as just like a cylinder, almost like a bullet shape, but like longer and thinner. Well, at least thinner. But once it gets in on the head, these kind of barbs pop out so that you could never pull it back unless you were somehow able to get the barbs to retract.
Well, I mean, you also maybe so it doesn't slip back out the hole too, right? We don't want your head shaking around moving that.
Yeah. But there's another function to this, I'm sure. But the stairwell is, I think, the most interesting part of this, because Milchick is always there to redirect her. And so every time we saw Hallie go into the stairwell, she actually was going into the stairwell. But that's not what she remembers when she gets kicked back into the severed office, right? Because she can't remember. She doesn't know anything that's happening outside the severed office. The stairwell is outside the severed office. So, of course, every time she went out that door, she came back into the severed office because her Audi was sending her back in. That's really cool. I did not get that out of
you didn't get that
episode when I should have gotten that.
Oh, okay.
But I didn't.
I already got, but I thought it was really interesting to see how she made the decision to get back in. Because in my head, I just figured her Audi was like, oh, man, weird. I must not have known I'm supposed to go out this door. And then she goes back in. Then happens again. And then I was wondering, like, you would think you'd be concerned, but on the same hand, it's her Audi. So she's like, screw this. She probably is scared of joining. They warned me about this. I'll go back in. But it's a lot interesting to see that, it's Milchick telling her and kind of convincing her Audi to, hey, get back in there and you will learn. And
the exact wording is her Audi is concerned. I don't want to be in there, do I? And he says, you're learning that you do, which is terrifying. And when she finally when he finally gets her to stay in, he meets her at the top of the elevator with the flowers that we saw from episode one and says, hey, old timer, one day down. So that's the story of the flowers.
Listen, if Hallie wants to quit, she's going to have to somehow do something to our Audi.
Looks like. I guess so.
Figure that out.
I guess so.
Well, yes, that's my favorite. That was a good scene. Yeah. I did like that intro. Good intro. I wonder if it's going to be doing more of that, like, different perspective intros.
So Mark's video, consent video, is in the trailer. So I assume we're going to see his intake at some point.
And we'll tell. All right. Yeah. Well, your favorite scene, but Mr. Sal, you already have a magic mind moment.
Oh, yes, I am.
The magic mind moment.
All right, Mr. Sal, I'm gonna put some fire under your feet here. You've hyped to me an excellent magic mind moment, and you know, you're like, Kurt, this is a great magic mind moment. You're gonna love this. You got the same one too, right, Kurt? I'll be honest, I don't think I do.
Oh, maybe really?
I do. Maybe I do. We'll see. I'm curious. What's your magic mind moment? Yeah,
for some clarity here, we had talked about doing the magic mind moment on a Culprits episode, and I talked you out of it because I said, no, we got to do it for this episode of Severance because it's perfect.
Good moment. Okay. So what is this? I felt mine was all right on the Culprits one, but we'll see. This one is, what's yours?
All right, Kurt, what do I always talk about? When do I take my magic mind?
All right, I think we do this afternoon. Take it in the afternoon.
I take it in the afternoon, right before lunch, right? Because, well, do you know why?
You're a bit of a dozer.
I'm a bit of a dozer. That afternoon slog really gets to me. And if I, you know, have lunch and then I, or maybe melon bloat, I don't know. But so if I have lunch and then I have work after lunch, I am just so tired. And if I sit down, I will probably doze. Now, luckily, I'm a teacher, so I'm on my feet most of the time, so I'm not dozing. But if I have a planned period right after lunch, oh, man, that is trouble because dozing is a problem. I am tired. I am exhausted. It's the afternoon slog. So I sympathize very much with you, Irving. Irving, who has been disciplined for dozing.
Embarrassing.
Literally dozes off here and has this terrible nightmare about black goo coming out onto his desk and Irving needs that magic mind. He needs Irving, I recommend you take it before lunch. Eat your lunch. You're going to be good for the rest of the day. Trust me on this. They got to get magic mind in that vending machine.
They got to supply magic mind or try taking it in the morning. But after, I mean, Mr. Sal loves taking it at lunch. Take mine in the morning. It's great. It's half the caffeine content in a cup of coffee. That was a good magic mind moment, Mr. Sal. I had the same one. But I did also, more on Irving, another way he could have utilized it is he seems very anxious and stressed, right?
Yeah.
And a multitude of things. I mean, given a very stressful environment and and his photos missing off his desk and he's got to go to the wellness center, like he's in trouble because he was dozing off. So, you know what could also help with that? Magic mind, right? It's a de-stressing, makes you feel less anxious. Certainly recommend it. Me and Mr. Sal both take it. If you want to try it, listeners, you can go to the link magicmind.com/KNS20. You can get 20% off your order or up to 56% off your first subscription if you use a promo code at discount KNS20. That'll be down in the show notes, so check that out. And thank you to Magic Mind for supporting the podcast.
Who said it?
It's the hit game show.
The hit game show.
I'll give you sweeping the nation. Who said it? Three quotes, 3 points. Three chances for heartbreak, but three chances to be victorious.
Yes.
Sal, hard, easy, medium, what are you feeling?
You ask me this every time, but my answer is always the same. You start easy and get harder.
Some people like to start hard and go easy, but no one ever wants to do the medium first. Today you will.
Yeah. You never listen to me. I don't know why you always ask.
Sometimes I go easy to hard. Yeah, you're right, though, actually, but it's not because you told me to. All right, which is the medium difficulty one here. Okay, here's the medium difficulty. Hip, hip.
That is Irving. Too helly. when she finally sees the scary numbers.
See, two words is all you need. Yes, you're spot on. Helly has a bit of a talk with Dylan about smuggling notes out of the elevator. Like, you know, come on, maybe there's some other way. This is where Dylan also gets a vending or food out of the vending machine. I think it's raisins.
Yeah, he picks out. Analysis paralysis or choice anxiety.
Choice anxiety is what I normally know as. Yeah. And he finally picks up. Irving returns. He's glad to have met Bert. Dylan, not so high on Bert. And Helly finally sees the scary numbers and successfully does her job. Hip, hip. So I'll say here what my theory is on what they're doing. And you know, this very well could not be it. And this gets a little wordy. So if you want to skip, it's kind of like, I had a little lesson in computer science, algorithms. Okay. Skip like a minute if you don't feel like hearing it. But
all right.
So you've heard of algorithms. I think everyone has. Like, you think of like.
I already skipped ahead a minute, Kurt.
That's fine. We okay. So, on. And that's my theory. <I'm just kidding>.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. We spent the whole minute joking about the minute. So an algorithm is actually, despite like wider, it's like complex computer code. All an algorithm means is a basic set of instructions. Or I shouldn't say basic, but a set of instructions. Okay. And typically in a computer use, but you can make like a recipe's an algorithm, right? It's just a set of instructions to do something. Right? If I give you a recipe to make mac and cheese, that's an algorithm on how to make mac and cheese. Set of rules to do something. Mm-hmm. All right. So, like, when you make programs or something, you can make an algorithm beforehand, which is just your set of rules you're going to do, and then you implement it. Boom. You got it. You know how it works. You made it. I could look at whatever I made, whatever program, and tweak it and stuff. At some point, for a college class, we made a puzzle thing, and it solved the puzzles. I'm not going to get into what it was, really. And we made it solve in different ways. Like, we hard-coded ways for it to solve it. But eventually, what we did was we made a neural network, which, to put it a lot simpler, was... We give it a bunch of how it can do inputs, okay? So things it can input in different outputs. And all you do is, it's a lot like evolution, is that you just tell it the inputs, kind of what you're grading it on, and like what you're looking to see from it. And then you have no idea how it runs. It'll just do random things. And you could generate like 1,000 samples of it where they're all slightly different. So it's all it is you're telling it these are your inputs and these are what you're allowed to control. Right, these are like your levers you can pull, and here's what I'm grading you on. And then you grade them all. And then 1,000 of them run, maybe, and you take the top 1%. So you take like top 10 of them, and you change those a little bit, and you have 1,000 of those. You run those, you take the top 10% of that, and you keep iterating on this. And eventually, right, if you set everything up correctly and it's an applicable situation where you can do it, you will end with a program. A form of AI that can just do that task, and you don't know how it did it. All right, you have no idea. I've programmed it. I wrote the code, but then I let it train itself, and now it can solve this puzzle. But I have no idea. I could not tell you how it solves the puzzle. I could not re-implement it the way it's solving the puzzle. I could not tell you how it does it. All right, and that's a common thing with very advanced like algorithms and AIs. Like so much stuff. You know, that's why data is important. But in this context, what I'm curious about is if this is like. They're acting as the algorithm in a way. So like, you could not explain how they do it. Right? It's impossible. You can't.
Yeah.
So they empty your brain, and however they get that emotional feeling in it, I don't know. But similar to an algorithm that could be created from either like evolutionary learning or like other means, don't know how it works. It just works, and that's how they do stuff. And so they're. I wonder if it'll be like. This company has the most advanced algorithms, but really, it's just people whose brains have been wiped of their memories, and that's the algorithm. So that's my theory. They're an advanced algorithm, but now that's not actually their purpose, though. It's dawned upon me. That's just the means of what I think they're doing. So,
all right,
there you go.
So what's the data then?
I don't know. I forgot about that part of it. I just thought about it. I got into this whole tirade. So really, now that I think about it, I'm kind of embarrassed. There is no real prediction in this. It's just more of what I think they're doing.
Yeah.
That's kind of embarrassing now, actually. Yeah. That's the part everyone cares about, isn't it?
Kurt, I had already skipped ahead a minute, and then I was dismayed to find out that I had to skip ahead 2 more minutes.
Yeah, it took a lot longer than I anticipated.
Just kidding. It's fine.
So, I have no idea what they're doing. Maybe I'll say search results from like a something.
Okay.
Actually, Lumi does medical work, right?
Medical and tech.
Now tech? That will say like advertising search results, something like that.
All right. Well, I do want to also point out a couple other things from this scene, and that is that Dylan despises Bert.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. For some reason, I thought you meant Irving. Yes, yes.
No, he hates Bert.
You're right, though. Yeah. Why does he hate Bert?
We don't know why he hates Bert, but he doesn't even want Bert to know where they are.
That is true. That's the funny part about like how hidden it is. The offices are really amazed. It doesn't even know where Bert is. By design.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but he also says he's thinking about the safety of this office, which that for their own safety. That's scary. I wonder what Bert has done.
Or anyway, Milchick tells them things. Like, hey, you don't
that
know.
Could be too.
I'll be sharing your location.
But Dylan does say that he met Bert once. He's an F. Anyway, Dylan also quotes the handbook at Irving. It says, "And all in Lumen's care shall revel in the bounty of the incentive spur." So, I this really sounds culty. I mean, it's like bordering on a religion. But when you think about it, these people don't have any of that. They don't have any like they may not even know like a religious text at all. Like this is probably like a religion to them. It's everything wrapped up in one. It's their family, their job, their religion, all of it. And that's a little terrifying.
Oh yeah, this is so horrific. All right, well on to the second quote.
Okay.
I certainly hope not.
Is this the easy one or the hard one?
I won't tell you.
I certainly hope not.
This is the easy one.
I don't know. How is this the easy one? There are so many people who certainly hope not anything. Oh, certainly boy.
Not.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think it's anything to do with Holly's intake. I don't think that it's anything to do with the removal of the photos. Oh, my goodness. The tiered prizes. I don't think it's anything to do with them. Let's see. The idea of what they do with their job, I don't think it's that. You already had something for that. I don't think it's anything to do with the iceberg because that was your favorite scene. Oh boy. The photo, well, that was also your favorite scene. It's all part of the party. It could be something on the date or at the like the pamphlet passing. I'm gonna come back to that in a minute. You know,
I certainly hope not.
I don't think there's any chance I'm going to get this. This is such a generic quote. I can't believe you're giving me this quote.
I give you too many easy ones, Mr. Sal.
But you said this was the easy one.
This is the easy one now.
Well, that's ridiculous. This is so generic. Oh man, I guess it could be something to do with Mark and Petey. Whatever. I'll say this is Mark talking to the pamphlet passers.
Ah, yes, the WMGC. I forgot the
Whole Mind Collective, WMC. See, I remember that.
Okay, you've got it wrong.
Yeah.
It was Dylan and Irving chatting in the staff room after Mark has called in sick. Irving is worried that Mark may have been fired. But Dylan, you know, kind of reassures him, no, he's probably sick. And he certainly hopes.
He doesn't want to be the department chair.
Doesn't want to be the department chair.
Yeah. Okay.
That would be too much if I said the department chair part. That's too much. So.
Oh, my God.
You got to say that. What else could I say?
It's something from a different scene. That's such a generic quote. I play in this game under protest.
You'll forget. How many Mr. Sal will forget?
That's where we're severed, podcast and outside the podcast.
All right. Except you just don't... Oh, never mind. I was going to say you don't tell the severed person they're severed, but I'm sure they'd figure it out eventually.
Well, this is a pretty public severance as well. We could easily listen to our severed selves.
You're right. Well, are you aware, though? Like, you,
that's a good question. I just stumble on the Showhoppers podcast. Oh, I like severance. Let me listen to this one.
I watch severance. All right, the hard one now. Just might be good to peruse when you're between things.
Well, that's not. That's the easy one.
That's what do you
it
mean?
It definitely is.
What about that's easier?
This is not generic.
You know what this is.
Yes, I know what this is. This is Irving. He has
all right,
it.
Say it then.
So the Irving hands Mark he printed out the page about switching out the photos.
Holy crap.
And while Mark is training Helly, like, here you go. See, I was right. This might be worth perusing when you have a minute. But yeah, that was the easy one, man. Because that's not generic. That's very specific.
I must have done it. The fact that all my quotes were Irving.
I figured. No, that's not why. But
I don't know how else you got it that quickly. But you got the second one wrong. Whatever. That was the hard one. That was the hard one.
Like when you gave me "Don't worry about it" and "We're shrinking," ridiculous.
That's kind of on brand, though. I had to do that. That one I thought would stick out to you. I think you would be after
I still don't agree, but I see your point. This is ridiculous.
Is this too easy of a quote now?
This one?
Yeah.
It wasn't too easy. It was good.
All right. Well, thank you.
This one was very fair.
You gotta reward the good then, right? You can't just punish the bad.
This was a good one.
I'll enjoy my praises now.
Okay. I'll get you a finger trap in the mail.
You need my incentive structure. Oh yeah. One other thing about these finger traps. Or not the finger traps, these incentive rewards. It's like I would work at a school. The fundraisers have like, hey, if you sell this much of that, you get like whatever the prize is. Well, I remember, it could be like a limo ride if you sell thousands of goods.
Yeah, exactly.
The incentive structure. So,
yeah.
Yes, you're spot on, though. Mark is training Helly on the terminal. It's where Kai tells her about, you'll just kind of feel the emotions. To do with that, we learn a bit about the incentive structure. Something noteworthy is that for some reason they gave Mark a crystal head cube thing.
Yes.
Don't know why.
They just gave it to him, not part of the incentive structure.
So he has that. Who knows why? And Irving, it kind of seems passive aggressive. I don't think he means to be passive aggressive. It's just, that's just the way the office works. But these photos are gone a little early. He keeps telling Mark that he goes, recommends he reads up on these rules. He has a chance to peruse them. And Helly ponders quitting. And I talked about this last episode that, if she quits, kind of kills this version of herself. So
exactly.
So like to want to quit. So when she actually goes to quit, it's a lot bigger statement than quitting your normal job. It's basically saying you want to die. You know what
I mean? It would be if it was like Dylan or Irving, but the fact that it's Helly and this is only her second day,
you're right. Probably, she doesn't realize the gravitas that you can't just quit and leave. And well, you say that, but Mark just explained it to her, and like I think she would understand the concept of it. Like we're talking about it right now, and we kind of recognize the concept of it. I feel like I don't think that's a lost concept upon her. That like this consciousness that she's feeling will be gone.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, I'm sure she understands it to a certain extent. I just don't think she's as ingrained in it that it would matter to her. I guess that's my point. Yeah, fine, I'll kill myself. I've only existed for 2 days anyway. But whereas the rest of these people have been in here for years. They have years worth of office memories that matter to them. Like this life matters to them more than this life matters to Helly.
That's fair. Yeah. She's got, I guess, nothing to live for lack of a better word phrase.
So. Now, she literally can't even say anything about herself when she gets that ball.
Why are they doing that to her in the ball game?
right.
Little chick's tactics. So.
I mean, her hair is shoulder length.
Yeah.
She could have said that.
Could have. Milchick got her with that one. Old Milchick. All right. Well, I mean, good job on Who Said It.
Oh, I think so. I'm very pleased with it.
All right. Well, don't be too pleased. Not perfect score. It's not, you know, you gotta,
playing it under protest.
You can under duress. All right. Okay. Well, let's go into the recap.
Okay.
So your favorite set of scenes, Ellie's perspective introduction. So we already talked about that. And then we get the actual introduction to the episode, which was this in last week?
No.
Okay. I was going to show that. Sick. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Because I was like, I don't remember that. I watched like twice. I saw this intro and I was like, I don't remember this from last week. Surely we didn't have it last week. I feel like a fool if I missed this.
Yeah. No, this was not in the first episode. And actually, I mentioned last time that Severance has two Emmy wins. One is for the score in one of the episodes that we haven't seen yet, and the other is for the intro.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's a very interesting intro. It is. I'm not going to really get into it too much, but it's just...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch. Give it a watch. It looks like it's Mark's duality that he's dealing with.
Right.
Anyway, Mark comes into work doing his duties as department chief, and this
man, he's the photos off. Department chief is kind of like a custodian too.
Well, it's taking part of his department. Well, what do you mean? Because I don't know what that is. You don't know that.
Yeah, he's like a cleaner though. That sucks. That's like, hey, congratulations, you made department chair. Now you get to dust and fill the soap.
Well, it's a great honor. See, and that's the great thing. Like you. That's a great honor that you get to fill the soap container. So yeah, he does all that work and he takes the group photos off, breaking protocol by doing it a little early. And Helly comes in and she's still adjusting in disbelief how time feels here. And Mark tries to comfort it. You know, hey, well, take it as feeling refreshing in the morning, right? You get a little tired near the end of the day and you're refreshed, or maybe some magic mind, but.
Yeah, focus. Yeah, exactly. Focus on the effects of sleep. Like maybe you are, maybe you're less tense in the shoulders, or you're energized, or something. Because we can't actually sleep ourselves.
Yes. So we get Mark training Helly in the terminal. We talked about that. Then we get the office party, and it kind of ends with Helly quitting. She goes to the elevator. She's written a note for her Audi.
I quit.
And very simple. It triggers the code detector. We meet Mr. Grainer. I don't know what Mr. Grainer really does. He seems like the security guy.
Maybe the I mean, guy. I guess he's the big bad, the scary.
Or maybe he's just
guy.
Like another supervisor, like Milchick, that just happened to be around. I'm not quite sure.
No, I don't think so. They had talked about this guy in episode one. Petey told Mark that he hates Grainer. They both do.
Oh, okay. Oh yeah, you're right. Yes, I do remember. Now, so Grainer, after he takes the fall for Helly, goes to the break room, which is
Mark does. Mark takes the fall. Yep.
And he's in the break room for I don't know how long. And we see Miss Coble, Harmony, as we're calling her, open the other door.
Yeah.
Or I don't know if it was the same door letting him out, but the way it panned, I thought it was a different door.
I mean, it seemed like he walked down a long hallway before she opened that door. So I would think different door.
There's the break room. Scary room. You gotta watch out
for
the
break room. It is a scary room.
No one wants to go to the break room.
Nope.
Oh, terrible. I hate breaks.
It's where you get broken.
Okay, you know, fair enough. So you get to Audi, Mark, which he is on a date with Devin's midwife.
I really like this scene a lot.
It's a good dinner scene. I mean, Mark's Audi, they tell a lot from just, you know, he's always drinking.
He is always drinking, you're right.
Conversation.
Gotta drown out the trauma of the switched out beds.
Like he even like waves over the waiters. We need more drink here. And conversation's a little flat between them, but eventually it gets around to Lumen. And you talked about this earlier about how interesting She comes up with some of the interesting stuff too, like, oh, you could be married and not even know it. Ooh, is that gonna happen?
Yeah, you could get married and have kids and just forget they exist for 8 hours every day for your whole life.
How do you deal with that?
I think for some people that's the point, he says.
Yeah, exactly, which appears to be for him too. They walk and talk, and we learn he lives in a Lumen housing, which explains the fact why he lives right by Harmony.
They said this, and then this is what made me think, how are we not seeing anybody else that he works with here?
Well, he only works with small, like, if you live in an apartment complex, you don't see everyone within a 2-day span. Like, maybe they do know each other. We just haven't seen them interacting yet. Like, maybe he is friends with Irving, and we just haven't seen them interact yet. So, like, I think there's so many ways. That parking lot in Lumen is a very big parking lot, and they said about half the town works for Lumen. And they might not all be on the severance floor, but that also means I doubt everyone in that, like, living space is severed as well. Like, they might be on a severed floor. So I think it's a big space. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, that's an example I'll give you is you work at a school, but you don't see every like staff member sometimes for a while, I'm sure.
At school?
Yeah, at school.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah. So that's what I think it's like. But in time, Michelle, give patience in due time.
I'll let it cook.
Exactly. Listen, when you make a stew, you gotta let it sit. You gotta let it cook. If you don't, I'll have a very cold and very hard carrots in that stew.
Okay.
Important to let it cook.
Oh, man. One time I did make my beef stew, and I love my beef stew, but I made it, and I didn't have the heat turned up high enough, so it never really got to a simmer, and the vegetables were not soft enough for me, so I cooked it some more.
But see, this is not – you can't do this, though, for – The analogy broke apart now, actually. I don't like – I forget that analogy. Throw it out. Okay. So he talks about Lumen housing, and he sees the WMC.
Yep.
They're anti-severance, and he goes over – not really the time and place to be doing this on a date, but he gets pretty political, very fierce with these.
Well, he's drunk.
What do you mean he's drunk? He's barely drunk.
And honestly, like, you know, there are certain things that politically are just going to always trigger you. So, for example, I work for a public school, and I remember I went to the zoo one time with my family, and there were flyers being passed out for a private school. And then I got triggered. It set me right off because at the time there was I don't want to get too political here, but at the time there was a whole thing going on in the state where I teach about basically the governor was really attacking public schools. So I was very triggered when I heard this. And it's this, you know, it was a kid who went to the school and kind of said, "Would you like to learn more about our school?" And I was like, "No." I was so nasty about it. I feel bad. It was just, you know, he's a kid.
Yeah.
And you were drunk, school. Too. Good for him. Yeah. I was not drunk at the zoo. I'm not drunk at the zoo with my kids. No. But I imagine, drunk or not, this is going to trigger Mark regardless.
Oh, yeah. So. I mean, it's very close to home. Like, this is
Yeah.
Fair. But he triggered nonetheless. Don't know how good that day really was. It doesn't look like Mark really liked it. He's home. Miss Selvig comes by with a peace offering. And
are we fighting?
So I wrote here in my notes, because when he's home alone before she comes by, he's drinking some more. And I wrote here, he drinks an uncomfortable amount. Like, they always highlight. I don't know. It's just the way they highlight it. It's just very uncomforting to me, which is good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And Miss Selva comes by. It's a good peace offering. It's a tasty peace offering. And he talks about her late husband, who had blueprints. A guest apartment. She has those blueprints in her purse, and it's for should she find anyone else in the meantime between his passing and her passing.
This is uncomfortable.
This is also uncomfortable. A bit of a proposition.
Sure seems that way.
After she leaves, he looks through Gemma's crafts, presumably.
But well, before you move on from that, though, so like. This is an interesting scenario because, I mean, we know that in the workplace, like the supervisor or the boss cannot make romantic overtures toward someone who one of their subordinates,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like, this is,
There are power dynamics there that make that scenario very uncomfortable for the subordinate and put them in a really awful, awkward situation, awkward spot. Now, she's doing that here. And if she's not severed, I mean, she is doing that, but he doesn't know that this is his boss. So is this sexual harassment?
Oh.
I mean, she doesn't really, like, proposition him. There's not a quid pro quo offered.
I would say no.
I also would say no, but you can see where this could be a problem. There's a fine line here, but
there is. But you know, my initial reaction is that this is a problem. Like, but then I think about there's a lot of things with being severed that I think is really creepy and weird. But is this ever really sexual harassment? Like, I'm trying to think of an instance where I would consider sexual harassment, but if he does not know the workplace, unless she used, like, confidential information to know, if she's not invoking the fact that she works with him, don't know how it's, like, workplace.
I'm not sure.
How did it make abuse or anything?
But she did just get done disciplining him in the break room, right? And now she's coming on to him. I don't know.
It's a lot of things, but I don't know if it's a abuse of power though, because he could just refuse her. Like, that's a weird thing.
But if he refuses her, is she? Could there be retributions for his enemy?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
I don't know.
But the thing is, so you're right. That is workplace abuse, but he's not under the fear. So the Audi. Okay, you know what? Actually, this might be a one-way road. This might be workplace abuse for the idiot, but the Audi, it's perfectly fine, right? You can say, it's all like, I'm not interested. And, you know, he has nothing about that, unless she starts punishing about the fact. Well, no, so it's comforting that I'm actually your boss in the inside, and I'm gonna punish you now. Like, you're going to have a rough time at work.
Yeah.
Well, without even using that, but you're right. For the innie, though, you're right. Yeah, no, that's true. Definitely for the
internet. Well, I mean, and really, it's a moot point because she doesn't actually harass him here. She just, makes this statement. There's nothing. Like, she doesn't even really come on to him. But that clearly is the intention.
Yeah, it would seem. Yeah,
it's just interesting to think about.
It is and I like that. Like the situation that could arise from this. I like how the show explores it. It's interesting.
Yeah.
So all right. Well, so after that night, he goes to bed. By bed, I mean goes to couch, and he calls into work. That makes not feeling great. It's all that alcohol. Maybe it's because he's lying and he wants to grab that letter Petey gave him, and he goes to Half Loop Road.
Yep,
we already talked about this scene where the rest of the staff chat about Mark not being in. We see upper management, as I keep calling them, meet, and they're concerned about Mark. And this is where it really shows that it seems like they're not severed. And it was abdominal issues.
Yeah.
And Mark arrives to Half Loop Road. Dylan and Helly are chatting. Irving looks like dozes off and has a nightmare of black sludge.
Yeah.
And Milchick comes in and grabs Irving.
Yeah, immediately. By the way, Dylan does mention that they only finish 1 in 5 files that they get assigned because they don't keep. They, like, spoil or something.
Oh, yeah, except for the freshman fluke.
Right, Mark's freshman fluke, which is probably why he got the crystal statue, actually.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, he probably did all 5 files or something before they expired.
Something like that.
Spoiled. Mark gets to the greenhouse. He figures out it's Petey's hideout.
Yep.
Irving is brought by Milchick to the wellness center, and he waits outside. Dylan and Helly work. She's still commenting on the fact that she's yet to see a scary number. And Dylan talks about the theories as to, like, what they could be doing. He thinks that the outside world must be really messed up if they're severing themselves. So maybe they're clearing the sea or something, getting rid of eels. That way they can have the sea. And we're
specifically
like
eels. That was really funny.
Irving, meanwhile, thinks they're getting rid of swear words in movies.
I love that.
Mark, PD, they chat about what they do at work, which PD really doesn't. He didn't say a whole lot to Mark. You know, he goes, "Well, I have a map. I left the OG map in the floor. I have a recording of the break room, just to show that to you." And he's suffering from reintegration sickness, which he talks as though it's a diagnosed sickness, but I think it's just the phrase he's coined for what he's going through.
Oh, well, he's the first person who's been gone through it, so he needs to do whatever he wants.
It's like, yeah, reintegration sickness, that's what I'll call it.
Yeah. And this is where we learn that he's been reintegrated for 2 weeks.
Oh, yes, you're right, which is a big deal. So he's undercover in there, which is, I think, yeah, I'm hoping next episode we'll see a bit of undercover PD.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
We get Irving waiting for his checkup. That's with Bert in the waiting room, Department of Optics and Design. And Irving compliments Bert immensely on his work and goes in for his checkup. Well, I'll ask you this after the checkup. He goes in for the checkup. Miss Casey shares great facts about his outing that will give him great pleasure. Please be sure to equally enjoy each one and relax. Yeah. Also, do not speak. he does lose some points throughout it for speaking, enjoying swimming. So when he learns his Audi swims very well, he enjoys that a little too much.
Yeah.
And when his Audi is skilled at kissing and lovemaking, he enjoys that a little too much.
Yep.
So, and there is a camera observing him this whole time. So whether other people are making comments on them, maybe they have other severed people whose jobs are to do stuff. Who knows? But that's his checkup. What do you think the checkup's for, though? Like, why are they checking up on him? Is it? My thought is due to, like, I don't want to say that cognitive decline, but just like, you know, age blowing you down, only because Bert also was older.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think this is a checkup. Okay. I think this is like a realignment. It's more like a chiropractor than it is a physician, right? So this is like, you know, here, you know what? You're having trouble. You're dozing off at work. So you must not be feeling great about things right now. Here are some things to feel great about. Okay, and they can say anything they want here. Like that list that she pulls out, like, I don't know if that's unique to Irving, but because she also tells him he's not allowed to say anything about the list to anybody. So it could be the same list to every single person that comes into the room.
Well, at least for that day. It's much like they recognize a Mark saying the same line for the game.
That's true. Right. So if it's a second time in, they'll have to get different stuff. But, you know, I tried to, in the early portions of this, I tried to figure out if there was a way for me to twist this so that it was all negative stuff. But, like, you're a friend to children and elderly people. I was like, is he, like, abusive to children and elderly people? Like, I don't know. Anyway, I couldn't like piece all of them together into one coherent like monster. But
you're a good swimmer.
Yeah,
it's a shark.
Exactly. But I do like to think that this is something that they just make up, and it's just designed to get him feeling good, get the endorphins going. But it really has nothing to do with his Audi.
Oh yeah, I don't think his Audi will have any of these. I think they will also ironically show us that his Audi is at least at some of these traits.
Does not have some of them?
Yeah, that does not. Just right. To show us as the viewer that, hey, they are lying about this as well.
Yeah.
Which like the projector incident.
Exactly.
Next scene we already talked about, which was Helly finally doing her job, but good job.
Did you get like a Dharma impression from? There are a lot of Lost parallels for me.
I did not until you just said that now. But like
everything, the video, everything
the
cleanness, is Lumen.
The mysteriousness of it all, like the.
But even like the, everything in the vending machine, it's like Lumen raisins and Lumen almonds, and like the coffee maker is a Lumen coffee maker. It's very Dharma-esque.
That's true. It does have Dharma vibes.
Yeah, yes. Dharma, you know, watch Lost.
Watch
and
Lost.
Listen to our coverage.
Yeah. Like, check the back catalog. We did all of Lost, 1 to 6.
Yeah.
And the last scene, Mark takes PD home. Mrs. Savig, it looks like. Is that Mrs. Savig that's looking out her window?
I think so.
All right.
Yeah.
She's looking out, presumably, at Mark's home. And Petey thanks Mark for letting him stay, uses the bathroom. He ignores a call, who calls a person who is inside work for who knows how long, but I forget. He did have an Audi, so.
I also wondered if the cell phone call wasn't what triggered this episode he's about to have.
So I called it a reintegration flare. He bleeds from the nose profusely. He then gets in the shower, and it looks like he has like a moment of severed. He severs for a bit where he sees himself in two different ways, and that breaks him a little bit. But hopefully he's all right.
We have no idea. He could be catatonic. He could be dead. He could just be zoned out. Who knows?
There you go. And that is the end of the episode. I'm curious. There's a lot of ways you could go with this next episode. Whether like we see the past with Petey in the office. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I think we'll learn more on the outside world with Petey. Maybe we'll just see a whole character altogether outside. Maybe we won't even follow Petey and Mark. I think we will, but.
I want a new character on the outside. I'm gonna change this to a 10 because there's nothing in this episode that I dislike. But I'm telling you right now, if there's not some kind of interaction between severed characters as their outies in the next episode, I'm not giving that episode a 10.
Fine. All right. To each be their own.
All right.
All right. If you really want them to not cook the carrots, that's fine. I guess they can always recook them later, I guess.
I'm hungry.
But I like my carrots cooked the first time.
I don't care about the cooking right now. I'm hungry.
Well, talking about the cooking, I wonder what time those carrots have been cooking for. Let's check TV time.
Yeah.
Ain't no time like a TV time. I think people at TV Time gave this episode a 5.
I also think this people at TV Time gave this episode a 5. In fact, I'm probably going to guess that for every episode of Severance. But let's see what they did say. Yes, they did give it a 5. 68%.
All right. Well, it's a good episode. Favorite character. I think the people say Mark, but you could have said Irving. I think you say Irving.
And I think you and the people say Mark.
You got me wrong, Chief.
Oh, you got me wrong, too.
Oh, really? You said Mark?
I did go with Mark,
I went with Irving.
Good. Reasonable, honestly.
I originally had Mark, but I swapped it to Irving.
I watched it twice. The first time I watched it, I wrote down 4 possible names for my favorite character. And then I gradually eliminated each one, except for Mark. So I end up going with Mark.
So can I ask why you eliminated Irving?
Irving, I just eliminated Irving. He was the last one I eliminated before I landed on Mark. And it's really just a lot of why I went with Mark is because of that. I mean, he's the only perspective we get outside the office. Especially when you think about the date scene and the whole brain collective, whole mind collective, like I really that's what we're missing from the other characters. The other two that were on my short list were Helly and actually Milchick, because the first 15 minutes of this episode, Milchick was who I would have gone with, but then he's pretty much non-existent for the last 2/3 of the episode. Mm-hmm. So.
Fair. No, I character wise, very strong characters. Like I'm intrigued by all of them. Like Dylan and Irving, they seem a little bit more auxiliary, but not even that much. Like they really.
I would not say that about Irving in this episode.
No, yeah, and that's the point. So going into this episode, I would have said, all right, Helly's new, so she's probably important. Mark's obviously in the spotlight. Dylan and Irving are just there because the 4 people are there in the cubicle. But Irving's really a lot more in this episode. I mean, more than Helly, I'd say. No. You could argue.
I don't know. Helly was on my short list.
Yeah.
Mostly because of that opening scene. Like that. I mean, that's
she's
a big
opening
deal.
Scene. She has her struggles. And she tries to quit.
Yes.
Irving has his own struggles, like a photo, dozing,
lack of magic center. Mind.
Yes. Really use the magic mind. But yeah, and Dylan's got some interesting stuff. You noted the food pickiness or
the choice anxiety
or whatever it is that he's doing when he chooses his food, and he loves his incentives. I'm very curious of those characters and upper management. Milchek's scary and cool. PD, I love all these characters. They've done a great job. Characters. None of them annoy me or like are boring to me. I agree.
I agree. By the way, the people did say Mark as well. 64% said Mark.
Who's second?
Helly, 28%. Irving's in third, 7%.
Yeah, Irving gang. Where? So, with that being said, then we are. That's it for this episode. Next week is episode 3, titled In Perpetuity.
In perpetuity, yes.
Who knows what that could hold, but in the meantime, listeners, we already referenced a few of our back catalog things. Last week we talked about it too, but yeah, some other stuff too. Again, I'll point out a range. Season 2 is going to be coming out, so check out season 1 we covered. Shrinking, we did that, season 1. And that's, I think, everything we did.
We talked plenty about Lost.
yeah, I have plenty of
that is not everything we did, not even close.
No, it's not really. If you like, look, check it out. We have a lot of series we've covered. Just look over up Showhoppers and whatever series you think, and we've certainly good chance we might. I shouldn't say we've done a lot of series. We've done a lot. How many? What was our quantity here?
Well, we've got over 400 episodes already.
Yeah,
so I'm not already, but whatever, you know what I mean.
Yes.
And we've covered 6, 12, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23 series.
That's a lot of series. Holy crap.
I know. So I take that back. I'm sorry, we've covered 22. We have not yet started the regime. So
okay. So.
Oh, no, I guess we have by the time this episode's dropping. So, yeah,
so we've covered 23 series. Yeah. So check that on the back catalog. If you have a series suggestion or if you just want to contact us, showhopperspodcast@gmail.com. You can even comment about that. Who said it? Where?
Let us know. Who's
Platoon?
Who's right on that? Is that too generic or is Kurt? Was that the easy one?
That's Kurt. The hard one. I thought was.
You
hard.
Said it was the easy one.
No, yeah, the easy one I thought you should have had, and the hard one to walk through. Okay, I gotta make my harder overall, I think. After that.
Unbelievable.
So, or maybe I should make it less easy. One of the two. I gotta apparently you want both. You want to be less easy and more hard.
And so. Harder. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So harder it will be then. So thank you, listeners, for listening. Again, we'll be back next week with episode 3 In Perpetuity.
Shoehammer some showhoppers into your day.